You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A.
Hello and welcome to episode 21 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast, and a very unique episode as we look ahead to the Super Bowl. I'm your co-host Kevin Pelton,
and I am Tristan Caracino. But before we talk about the Super Bowl, I want to talk really quick about the things that we can't talk about.
There's a lot that we can't get to today.
Here's my list so far. A big week for Husky football and basketball.
Yeah.
A crazy NBA weekend.
Absolutely.
Pharrell's hat.
I've got some good Pharrell's hat material.
Can't talk about it.
Nope.
The Black Portland mixtape.
Yep.
Anything else?
I went to a crazy high school basketball game tonight. Can't talk about that.
Crazy high school basketball games. Can't talk about it.
I feel like this is the fourth guest on Carson. Like, we had the best intentions of getting to these things, but sorry, it's just not going to happen.
Sorry, Pharrell's hat. We wanted to get to you.
Macklemore backlash, actually. That would have been another good one.
Yeah, that would have been fun. Anything about the Grammys, that would have been good to talk about.
Yep. Oh,
can't do it.
Bad timing.
Sorry for coming up against the Super Bowl, Pharrell.
I think all we can do is talk for probably 50 minutes straight about the Seahawks and the Broncos, right?
Yeah, so I want to talk about general thoughts first, right? Just really quick. I think that the tone around town has been that, well, first off, people are excited.
Oh, I had noticed that, actually.
If you're not in Seattle, this is the most excited that people in Seattle have ever been about a sporting event.
I don't feel like there's any comparison to 2006. I mean, it's hard to remember 2006. It seems like a lot longer ago than it really was, but it seems like just infinitely more excitement.
It's really strange. that was what I wanted to talk about in this general thoughts section, was to get your thoughts to see if it was the same.
Yeah.
Because that's my perspective. Talking to people, it's like, that person cares about the Seahawks now?
Really?
I'm having a conversation about the Seahawks with this person who has not paid attention to the team all year long. It's not a bad thing, but it's crazy to me.
Or not even all year long, like their entire lives.
Yeah.
Like, it's the mom test, absolutely. Our mom is now a Seahawks fan and is buying t-shirts from stands on the roadside.
It's different.
It's weird.
I mean, it's awesome. It's also really strange. Being a Seahawks fan, who's been a Seahawks fan since 1993 or so, in that range. Right?
And are you saying that yourself, or are you saying that about me?
Both of us.
I don't know that I remember you being that excited about games at age 8.
I was pretty excited. The 95, I think I remember being really excited. The Vinny Testaverde no touchdown year, what year was that, 98?
Yeah.
Okay. I remember really caring about that.
There are some questions you can ask people to determine whether they're real Seahawks fans.
Oh, like, really?
If they remember being excited about John Freeze at any point, you know they're a real Seahawks fan.
Can you spell John Freeze?
Even real Seahawks fans may not be able to
do
that.
What church did Sean Alexander go to? Have you ever heard of Walter Jones?
I feel like Glenn Foley's 5-interception preseason game is a pretty good test of whether you're dealing with a serious Seahawks fan, if they remember that. That was a memorable evening.
That's how you weed out the non-Seahawks fans?
Exactly.
Glenn Foley.
Yeah, just Dan McGuire, whether they hear that name and immediately shudder.
Yeah. Name 3 bust Seahawks quarterbacks.
Whether they were ever excited about the John Kitna era?
But yeah, it's really strange around town. If you're not here, it's kind of a cool moment that the whole city is so captivated, and it's something that we've never experienced before, and I hope that it's able to continue to next week.
I agree.
So let's talk about the Broncos first. And when I was thinking about this game, I was looking at it, and I was seeing a team. This was errant thoughts. These were bad thoughts. Where the Seahawks, the 3 facets of the game, offense, defense, special teams, where the Seahawks dominated in 2 of those aspects, and the Broncos were better than them in a 3rd aspect, but the Seahawks didn't have a bad offense, and the Broncos had a really good offense. And then Bill Barnwell wrote a story on Monday, and it started out, "You're underrating the Broncos' offense." And I was like, "Me? I'm under..." And then it goes, "Yes, you." And I was, "Oh, me." And so I think that was kind of a good wake-up call for just how good the Broncos' offense is.
The way I've been thinking about it, and partially informed by that great Bill Barnwell piece, is we've talked a lot about, on the podcast, about Pete Carroll's philosophy of competition and always competing, and about You know, we talked about the 49ers bringing the best out of the Seahawks. Well, for the Seahawks defense specifically, there is no better test possible, possibly in all of NFL history, for this defense than the Denver Broncos offense and Peyton Manning.
No, I mean, you're pretty much assuming that they're playing, if not the best offense of all time, one of the top five best offenses.
Yeah, top five, top ten at very, very worst.
And then you look at the Seahawks secondary, and it ranks as one of at least the top 10 secondaries of all time. So it's this insane situation where you have a Super Bowl, which I feel like maybe it's just because we're in Seattle, but the excitement for it is so high because you've got the best against the best, and this never happens.
No, especially not lately. I mean, the history, recent history of the Super Bowl has been surprising teams. And so to first off have the number one team from each conference, the two teams that we've kind of been thinking about all season, you know, obviously San Francisco and New England and other teams were in that mix, but, you know, teams that we've been considering this matchup all the way back to when they met in the preseason. And then for it to be these two teams that are built in completely opposite ways so that it's strength on strength, that's really exciting.
At some point, I want to talk about your thoughts from that preseason game, because I wasn't there, aside from the medic truck coming onto the field a la Madden 93.
Yes.
If you have any other thoughts besides that. But let's come back to that in a second. Let's talk about what the Broncos do specifically and what they're good at.
They're good at passing the football.
They're really good at passing the football.
They're also pretty good at running the football. Are there any other facets of offense?
Fumbles. Fumble-rooskies.
Yeah, they're not very good at those.
They're good at kicking also, though.
They are.
I mean, that's special teams, but they're good at any way that you can score points.
Yeah.
But so the things that they really excel at, and this is kind of obvious, is short passes.
Mm-hmm.
Making short passes turn into long passes.
Mm.
And pick plays at about 5 to 12 yards. So what do you think that the Seahawks can do to defend against those things?
I don't know. It's interesting because if you were going to design an offense to go up against the Seahawks defense, I think in many ways Denver would be it. Number one, the vulnerability at times to the run. Number two, when they have been beaten, it's been in that short to intermediate range. And as you know, especially the Houston game, the Indianapolis game were a couple of examples of that, where it was really picking on the Seahawks linebackers, who picked up their play since then, but also haven't necessarily been tested by a group that's this effective.
It's something, yeah, they haven't seen an offense like this really in a long time, because the Saints pass the ball well, but they don't pass the ball well in a similar way that the Broncos pass the ball.
They're a vertical team. They're trying to stretch the field, which is what the Seahawks defense is designed to prevent.
And the 49ers offense played pretty well against the Seahawks, but it was such a completely different thing with plays breaking down and Colin Kaepernick scrambling, and obviously that's not anything you're going to have to worry about Peyton Manning.
That is a nice thing. Don't have to worry about that.
But I do think that one interesting thing is Cam Chancellor, and I think Robert Mays mentioned this. Cam Chancellor is going to be hugely important in this game. It'll depend upon, is Cam Chancellor picked and not able to tackle people immediately or make big hits or scare people going across the middle? Or is he able to do those things and really neutralize those intermediate routes, you know? Is Wes Welker going to take a big hit on the first series and be that much more scared to go over there?
Yeah, I think that's really key. And I think the other thing with Cam Chancellor that's very interesting is so much of the Denver offense is predicated on reading the defense. And specifically, Peyton Manning is going to come to the line of scrimmage and he's going to look at how many defenders are in the box. And that's going to determine his choice of whether they're going to stick with a passing play often that's called or audible to a running play. Now, we saw that one of the best examples of that was in the AFC Championship game. They're in a third and long, I think third and 10 situation, and Manning sees that New England has, I think, six guys in the box, let's say, and that's a favorable situation. Checks down to a No'Shawn Moreno run, goes for 20-plus yards at a first down as part of a big drive. So the Seahawks, you almost always put eight guys in the box. That's the way their defense is designed, with Chancellor playing up towards the line of scrimmage almost as a fourth linebacker. That would almost seem to guarantee Denver passing the ball a lot. But I think if you're the Seahawks, even though Denver is good at running the ball, you feel a lot better with them running the ball than with it in Peyton Manning's hands. So do you play Cam Chancellor back a little bit more than usual to try to bait them into running the football?
I think it's such a perfect strategy to go against this defense, basically that 4-4 that they play with Chancellor as the fourth linebacker. It's something where he can cover really well right now. I mean, Cam Chancellor's playing the best football of his entire career at this point.
Yeah, his playoffs have been phenomenal.
And so he's somebody who can cover really well. He's not going to get that lost. He's going to be able to man up with somebody like Julius Thomas. And they have two linebackers in KJ Wright and Bobby Wagner who can cover a lot of ground. So if they beat them into passing the ball in those situations, I think that's a win for the Seahawks.
That's interesting. I still think that as much as possible, you want to take the ball out of Peyton Manning's hands. And I say that despite the fact that Knowshon Moreno has been more effective on a per-play basis this year than Marshawn Lynch in the context of that offense and being able to run in favorable spots.
I mean, that's definitely system-based in that he's almost always running in these favorable situations, and Marshawn Lynch is being asked to carry the team in a lot of situations.
Yeah.
Right? And being forced to run in poor situations. You know, I don't know which one they want there, honestly. They're the same thing. they're going to be looking for something in this intermediate range, you know, 3 to 5 yards, maybe 3 to 8 yards. And I think the Seahawks can stop the run really well. I have no lack of faith in the Seahawks' ability to stop the run at this point.
I have a little lack of faith in it.
I think that they've played it really well. I mean, they held Frank Gore to absolutely nothing last week. They shut down the Saints. They've had a lot of consecutive really good games against the run.
I would not describe them as shutting down the Saints.
There were a few good cutback runs against the Saints. But even looking farther back than that, Zach Stacy had nothing against them. Andre Ellington got nothing against them.
But it hasn't been as consistent, I think, in the second half.
It's something where it still doesn't worry me. It does worry me a little bit more with Peyton Manning, but neither of those things really scare me, honestly. I don't know what to be scared of, because I think that on the outside...
I'm scared of everything.
The thing that I'm
this
most...
This is the number one... We just talked about this possibly being the number one.
I know, it's really strange, and I have some other thoughts. The Broncos are going to score.
Yeah.
Like, they're not going to stop the Broncos from scoring, but I don't know if it's going to come on long, sustained drives. The way that it did against the Patriots last week.
So you think they're going to hit big plays?
I think that is their best chance at scoring. I think it's a missed tackle, maybe even an Earl Thomas missed tackle, or an Earl Thomas missed angle, and somebody like Demaryius Thomas is lined up against Byron Maxwell or Walter Thurmond, gets past there, Earl Thomas takes a wrong angle, and Demaryius Thomas runs for a long way. I think that's their best bet. Or there's one or two runs from Knowshon Moreno where he breaks through, but he's held to 1 yard of carry for the rest of the game.
I think it's more possible the big play out of the running game. I'd be surprised if we saw it in the passing game. The other thing that is not a factor that we saw a couple weeks ago in the NFC Championship game, Colin Kaepernick was able to, at times, just use his arm strength to make plays that no one else can against the Seahawks defense. The touchdown to Vernon Davis, or to Bolden, rather, being the primary example of that, where he overthrew Earl Thomas. Peyton Manning does not have that ability anymore.
I don't think they're going to bait Peyton Manning into those same type of throws that they were baiting Colin Kaepernick into making. And it was a great strategy, because Kaepernick ended up making mistakes on two of the last three possessions.
I don't know if that was a baiting situation so much as Kaepernick just believes he can make those plays.
It's true, but they were showing him these zones. I see them manning up a lot against the Broncos.
Now here's, I think, something that's really important to watch, is how much Denver uses in terms of formations to generate matchups. So, as we know, Richard Sherman typically sticks to the right side of the field.
Yes.
And that gives Denver the option to decide kind of what they want to do with him. So New Orleans in the first half of that game was able to essentially make him a non-factor by just sticking a blocking tight end out there, and you know, maybe going to the other side of the field. Now, the other thing that we saw the Saints do that Denver will do quite a bit is bunch formations with three receivers together. And out of those, the Seahawks will generally assign a cornerback to take one side or a safety to take another side. And so that allows the Broncos to generate the matchups that they want.
It's true, and they can also have that third receiver in there kind of get lost underneath. And that's the play where somebody like KJ Wright or Bobby Wagner really needs to be able to follow that receiver.
Mm-hmm. And that's where I think Wes Welker is their most important receiver in this game.
I definitely agree with you. I see somebody like Eric Decker and Demaryius Thomas being completely taken out of the game, save for one or two big plays.
The one thing is, I think they may be able to hit some comeback routes against the Seahawks corners. We saw San Francisco do that during the regular season. They really didn't try it much last weekend.
No, they were just looking for holes in the zone last week, or 2 weeks ago. So that definitely is an option. if they're looking for that, but I don't know if I see it too much. The other thing that scares me is, how do you defend against the pick plays that Denver runs? Really, literally, what is the defense against that? Do you play through it? What do you do?
It'll be interesting to see whether, you know, it didn't happen today at Media Day, whether Pete Carroll brings that up and coaches through the media a little bit, because and how that gets called
exactly, is that a penalty? You know?
It's almost as important as how contact on the Seahawks cornerbacks is called on the outside, which I'm sure is something that Denver is very interested in.
And I wouldn't be too worried about that. I think that they're going to call it fairly loose. I think that the referees do not want penalties to decide this game.
Especially after 2006.
But the pick plays is something where they'll probably call that loose also.
Yeah.
I don't see them calling a ton of penalties there. And the Seahawks obviously are a much more physical defense than the Patriots defense is. Are they going to play through that and try to just attack those people who are picking them?
I don't know.
Are they going to still be looking for contact after that if Cam Chancellor is running through Wes Welker?
I mean, that could be another situation where you start passing more guys off, potentially, as opposed to...
That's the one argument for playing a zone defense that I really see also,
is that
you can't pick against the zone, really.
And I mean,
you're
going
to get called for a penalty if you're trying to pick against
the
zone.
And the Seahawks do have a tendency to play zone underneath.
Yeah.
So they'll be in man on the outside with Earl Thomas is the deep safety taking away the middle of the field and preventing the big play. But then underneath, oftentimes, they'll be in zone with their linebackers and with Cam Chancellor. So that's something that may be effective to neutralize what Denver's trying to do. It certainly worked very well against New Orleans when they tried a short passing strategy, and especially in the regular season meeting.
And then what about, so this is third downs. To me, that's probably going to be the biggest thing. There have been a lot of stories about that. But if Denver is able to pick up 3-4 yards on first and second down, third downs are going to be huge because they're going to be in a lot of third and shorts.
Well, I took a look at this, and the one thing is, it is possible to get off the field against Peyton Manning. In the regular season,
absolutely,
they only converted 32.6% of the time on third and seven or longer, according to Pro Football Reference's database. So, you know, that's about 1 in 3. They're 50-50 when you get to third and four through six. Now, they have been better on third and long in the playoffs. They've picked up 5 of their 9 third and longs, including that big one against San Diego late in the game when they were able to kill the clock with their final drive.
Third and 17, yeah.
But, you know, you can, if you're able to be successful on first and second down, you dramatically improve your chances of getting off the field.
And Denver is a team kind of like San Francisco that we looked at last week, where it's kind of a tale of two different teams, right? In the playoffs, Denver has been a very different team offensively than they were during the regular season. The big plays aren't there in the same way that they were during the regular season, and you've seen more of an offense that's trying to chew up clock, have long possessions, have sustained possessions, and keep the other team's offense off the field.
Yeah, which was very successful. I mean, I think that was more of a game plan against New England in particular, where they were trying to do it, but I think it's also a product of just taking what the other team is going to give you. That's the big thing that stands out to me about Peyton Manning and the Denver offense. Is they're going to look at what you're doing and they're going to take what you give them, because there is no perfect defense, even the Seahawks defense.
I don't know. It's a really weird thing where when you look at it, I can see the game and I don't see how the Broncos are going to be able to move the ball. What are the Seahawks going to give them?
I mean, San Francisco was able to pick up chunks at times.
They were able to pick up chunks for two reasons, right? Because Colin Kaepernick was able to throw really strong arm passes slightly over the heads of defenders. And from running the ball, scrambling on broken plays up the middle. Those are really the only two ways that San Francisco was able to move the ball. Otherwise, Seattle was almost perfect defensively.
But when the Seahawks Joe Gudo full-out zone, there is a tendency for there's often holes that are open in it.
Where somebody like Julius Thomas, Wes Welker, is able to find a hole in the zone and kind of duck down in there.
And I think that's the main way that Julius Thomas is going to be able to be a factor in this game, because the Seahawks have been so effective against tight ends running seam routes with Earl Thomas.
Okay, so here's another factor in that, is it's going to take a little bit longer there, and then you have to start talking about the pressure from the Seahawks defensive line, which we haven't talked about yet.
No, I think that's a crucial thing that we should talk about. The Denver, because Peyton Manning is so good at getting the ball out, number one in the NFL in adjusted sack rate this year.
And he's really good at getting the ball out on those quick passes, like, boom, a flare to Demaryius Thomas, boom, a pick play, is hitting it right away, boom, 5 yards right there. On plays where they're having to take time to find the holes in the zone, do you feel like that'll give more time to people like Michael Bennett and Cliff Averill to get to Peyton Manning?
Certainly more time, and, you know, the Denver offensive line is not a strength of this team, especially with Ryan Clady being out for the year, their star left tackle. They've also had some other injuries. They've shuffled a lot. They've been very effective in terms of run blocking, and you know, in concert with Manning's ability to get the ball out, they've been effective. But I think if you're the Seahawks defensive lineman, you look at this and feel like you should be able to win some of those one-on-one matchups.
And I would expect them to. Honestly, when we're talking about this, I feel even more confident. Bill Barnwell needs to tell me again how good the Broncos offense
is. Again, number one in adjusted sack rate. I'm going to bring that stat back out. Now, the thing is, when Manning does get hit, it often has not been good for him. We saw that in the game at San Diego, where he got really banged up and was dealing with, you know, ankle issues that bothered him for a few weeks there, and his play was kind of lackluster for a stretch after the huge, huge start.
Is it a game where Peyton Manning is not going to be hit at all, like last week against the Patriots? No way.
Yeah, I don't see him being completely clean.
But
I don't see five, six sacks or anything like that.
No, absolutely not. But if they're able to hit him one, two, three times, even hits necessarily, not necessarily sacks.
That's true.
Are they able to fluster Peyton Manning in that situation?
I mean, he's seen this a few times. This is not his first rodeo. This is not his first Super Bowl.
But this is the best defense that Peyton Manning has played in his entire career.
Probably, Peyton
Manning has not played against a better defense than he is going to play on Sunday.
When you put it that way, it does sound much better.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
Literally, the Seahawks have never played a better offense than they're going to face on Sunday, though.
And if you do want to go back to the preseason, the Seahawks defense was really effective in that game. Came up with a touchdown on, I can't remember if it was a fumble or an interception return, but kind of had Manning flustered. Now, obviously, there's no game planning there. You're just working on your own things. It's a totally different scenario. But they did play really well in that match.
And it was at home also.
That too.
But the Seahawks did dominate every facet of that game. Really quick, do you think that this will seem like a home game for the Seahawks in any way?
No, not really.
I mean, they definitely have more fan support right now than the Broncos have. The Seahawks fan base is much more rabid than the Broncos fan base is, judging by the photos of the send-off.
I mean, I think it's going to feel a lot more neutral than it did in Detroit, where it was all Steelers fans and Jerome Bettis fans that game that was unexpectedly canceled.
All the fans showed up and then they canceled the game.
Which is a scenario, I guess, this weekend.
It could be canceled again.
This weekend would be canceled for real because of the weather.
But I do think that there's some chance where maybe the crowd is able to get behind the Seahawks a little bit more. Let's say you're a neutral fan going to the Super Bowl. Who are you going to cheer for?
I don't know. I might be tempted to cheer for Peyton Manning.
I just think that you always cheer for the ragtag bunch of guys who come together and have a crazy, exciting defense and play really physical, classic football.
I guess it depends on your perspective about Richard Sherman, doesn't it?
It does.
So do you think it's a factor whether the Seahawks are able to make some big hits early and
absolutely
kind of an intimidation?
Getting to Peyton Manning is going to be huge. Hitting somebody like Wes Welker is going to be huge. There was an interesting thing where Football Outsiders broke down Demaryius Thomas, and it was basically a long, complicated way of saying that Demaryius Thomas is a soft receiver. And that if you bump him at the line of scrimmage, he's not going to be good. If you put any contact on Demaryius Thomas, he's not going to catch the ball.
Well, do you think the Seahawks will do that?
Do you think the Seahawks might play a physical brand of defense in the secondary?
Well, I never.
If you are able to bump Demaryius Thomas, he will let you intercept the ball, is what the Football Outsiders' story. He's able to go up and get some things if he has separation, but nobody has separation against the Seahawks.
I just don't even see Manning looking Demaryius Thomas's way that often.
I'm telling you, one screen and he breaks through, though. I think that's one play where I see Denver really scoring.
One other thing to watch in this game, which could be really crucial, package plays. Denver started using a lot of those in the playoffs, so where they will either look to, again, reading the defense, mm-hmm. Manning will either hand inside to Knowshon Moreno on kind of a read option looking run, where obviously him keeping it is not an option.
Yeah, read option for Peyton Manning. I would love to see that.
If Peyton Manning scored on a read option in the Super Bowl, that would maybe be the greatest.
I suppose I could see a situation where they were at the one and he did that fake tuck
against Dallas.
He did that
one time this year, but that was his first touchdown in, I think, 2 or 3 years. But anyway, so
he would also risk dying if he did that.
He chooses based on the defense between the inside handoff to Moreno or passing on the outside where they'll set up a screen usually for Demaryius Thomas, maybe for Eric Decker. So that's something they've started to use a lot. That's tough to defend.
I mean, absolutely. And I think that they will break through on one of those plays. Like I said, I would project that Denver, I think the Seahawks defense even thinking about it more right now, is going to do really well in this game.
You're getting way too confident.
I know I am. I hate it. I think they score 14 to 20 points.
Oh, I think they score 20 to 27.
Maybe two. I think they'll score two touchdowns and two field goals. 20 points, and it'll be on the Seahawks to score more than that. So let's turn to the Seahawks offense.
And this is where, in theory, in statistical terms, the Seahawks should have their advantage.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that the one big advantage to point to is the return of Percy Harvin, and if Percy Harvin is able to play a full game.
So we just talked about package plays with Broncos, and that's something the Seahawks put in for the first time that I can recall, certainly, with Percy Harvin during the divisional round game against the Saints. And they ran it, I think, twice or three times in that game, and had one play where it was set up for at least a 20-yard gain. Unfortunately, it appeared that Russell Wilson might not have been able to get his grip on the ball. He ended up scrambling instead of throwing it out there, but they had the screen set up perfectly to Harvin.
And it's something where they were so excited to have him back in that Saints game, and all those plays are still there, and Denver's only seen a few of them.
Yep.
Right? All year long, you can look at tape for the entire season of the Seahawks and not really know what they're going to do with Percy Harvin.
But the other thing is, it's not even about tape, because the beauty of the modern NFL offense that, you know, some of which the Seahawks are starting to install, and especially in the college game, is it's all based on reads.
Yeah.
It's all based on what the defense is doing and you taking advantage of it. So if they start to take away Percy Harvin, that leaves open the inside handoff to Marshawn Lynch.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's the interesting thing, and I agree with you that you're able to take what you're given. And Percy Harvin allows you to develop those reads, right? Percy Harvin is your version of DeAnthony Thomas, right? He's somebody who can do all these different things. And so when you think about it, okay, there's a fly sweep with Percy Harvin. The first time you hand it off and he gets 8-9 yards. The second time that you do that, the whole defense is looking for Percy Harvin. And every single one of those Broncos linebackers, Danny Trevathan, all of their secondary is inching toward where he's going. And boom, you hand it off to Marshawn Lynch. He goes the other direction on a counter the other way, and there's nobody there to tackle him.
Which is actually what happened on his first beast mode touchdown against New Orleans. That was another situation where they were potentially setting up the Harvin screen on the other side, and that was part of what allowed Lynch to get free.
And they're able to set up both on plays where they can still pass it to Percy Harvin. They don't just have to be running a fake fly sweep there. They still have the option. It's just an option fly sweep to Percy Harvin, and it opens up the run game, plus all of the other receivers on the field too, and somebody like Zach Miller.
It's a lot to think about for the Broncos defense, and it's a new experience, I think, for Lynch in many ways, who has seen people just load up against him most of this season.
It also, I was thinking about this, in the San Francisco game, most often they had to bring in Alvin Bailey as a sixth offensive lineman,
yes.
Right? The whole center of the offense moved to the middle, right? The offense wasn't spread out at all because they had to have a sixth lineman in. That's another person who they're not going to be passing the ball to. They're not going to be running the ball to. Everything about it was so condensed. And what Percy Harvin does is he stretches out the defense so much. You can utilize every single inch of the field in a way that you could not do against San Francisco.
It's almost like a basketball thing where if you have a great three-point shooter, his value is not only his ability to shoot the three, but it's that he opens things up so much for everyone else. And I think that's very similar to what Percy Harvin does.
And then you also have to say, so when you look at Denver, throughout the season, they've been a pretty good team against the run.
Yep.
They've stopped, I think they're ranked 9th against the run, and then they rank 21st against the pass. And when you look at them against the pass, they're without
Chris Harris tore his ACL in the opening playoff game against San Diego, and that really was a turning point in that game, where after he went out and Quentin Jammer came in to replace him in that game, the Chargers were able to really pick on him with Keenan Allen and get back into that game.
It's true, and it's something where it concerns me. So I was reading Robert Mays, I think it was Robert Mays, who was saying that combined, the Patriots and the Chargers scored 6 points through the first three quarters of each of those games. And then they both went off in the fourth quarter. And I was thinking, each of those teams went into those games with the wrong game plan. They said to themselves, the Patriots said this, and for some reason the Chargers said this, we're going to run the ball against the Broncos.
Well, they were vulnerable to the run late in the regular season. San Diego had a lot of success running the ball against them when they went in there and won on Thursday Night Football. and pulled that upset. So I think that was, it was an understandable strategy, but they maybe were not quick enough to adjust when they were not having success there. But the real big key to that, Terrence Knighton, mm-hmm. Porkchop, is you surely know him, was just a monster in the AFC Championship game. Had about as good a game as you can possibly have is a 3-4 nose tackle.
And I wasn't able to see that game because we were tailgating for the NFC Championship game. But their line also is without Kevin Vickerson, who they were with through most of the season. It's another beast in the middle of their line.
Vickerson, I think he's only kind of a meh talent, but you know, Knighton has really stepped up, not only stuffed the run, came up with a big play on the two-point conversion that New England had, and also came up with a sack, which you do not expect from a 3-4 nose tackle. So
absolutely.
Controlling him at the line of scrimmage is going to be key. That's a big task for Max Unger. And he's a guy with his strength. I mean, part of what happened with using Elvin Bailey as a sixth offensive lineman in the NFC Championship game was to neutralize Justin Smith's strength.
Yes.
Now, he plays out on the edge. It's a little bit different. You can't necessarily use an extra offensive lineman in the same way against Knighton. But that's one scenario where possibly it could be a factor if that allows you to double-team him.
But you look at all the targets that Seattle has at receiver, right? Especially with Percy coming back. You've got the deep threat in Jermaine Kearse, the intermediate threat in Doug Baldwin, basically the first down receiver, and then you've got Golden Tate, who can do kind of everything and do similar things to what Percy can do. How do you think they'll take advantage of that Broncos secondary?
So I think that's where the big key is. You want to get them in a nickel,
mm-hmm.
because Champ Bailey has been playing on the outside. He's potentially a little bit vulnerable. He's not the star that he once was. He's now finally getting to the Super Bowl as a lesser version of himself. But I still think their weakest spot is when they go into the nickel and they move Champ Bailey inside and they put Tony Carter on the outside, a guy who I think may even have been inactive for the San Diego game, didn't play any snaps in that before becoming a big factor in the AFC Championship game.
And their options there are Tony Carter or Quentin Jammer, who's widely considered to be the worst player in the world.
Just a slight exaggeration there. But so I think what you'll see the Seahawks do is try to go to three wide receivers, maybe even four wide receivers.
I think they'll have four wide often in this game.
But I think that maybe you want to stick with three wide receivers because of the fact that you also want the play-action threat, I think, is going to help you create that kind of separation. And that's where you may want to stick a Jermaine Kearse, try to get a Jermaine Kearse matched up with him, who's maybe been your most effective deep ball receiver, as you saw in the NFC Championship.
Absolutely. We'll come back to Jermaine Kearse when we get to our Nostra Tristan section.
I'm sure we will.
but I do think that Marshawn Lynch might have a good game in this game, right? But if he does have a good game, it'll be because of everything that Percy Harvin is opening up for him and the receivers are opening up for him.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, the Broncos have allowed 129 yards on the ground the last two games in the playoffs. They've been very effective against the run.
I don't want to rule out him having a good game, but I do think that the Seahawks, and I know this is Pete Carroll's real instinct, I don't think they should come out thinking we need to run the ball and run traditionally, basically running the ball up the middle, do what they've done all season. When they run the ball, I think they need to do it in interesting, inventive ways, and I think that a little bit, if they're running read option, Russell Wilson needs to keep it sometimes.
I mean, that hasn't. People have been criticizing him for not keeping the ball, but honestly, watching those games carefully, I haven't seen that there. Defensive ends have been staying at home. I don't know how Denver plays that. We haven't seen them against
the read
option.
It's something
where
he needs to do it at least once to create the threat of it, and he needs to be running with reckless abandon in this game also.
Without question. I mean, you take off any restrictions or anything like that, but they haven't really faced a team that runs a lot of read options since...
The Raiders.
Since... Oh, yeah. But I don't know if they were running it a ton...
Oh, in the Matt McGloin era.
Pryor came in the second half, but I mean, a team that primarily runs it, not since Washington in week 8, so that was a while back.
But I don't want to think that the Seahawks are going to be focused on their kind of traditional game plan, which would be run the ball with Marshawn first down, run the ball with Marshawn second down, try to pick up third and three, third and four.
So that's, I think, where they get in trouble against any defense, let alone against the Denver defense.
I mean, it's better because Denver doesn't have as good of a secondary as they've faced. They're probably facing the worst secondary and defense overall since week 12 against Minnesota.
But basically, you're putting yourself in a situation where you have to be perfect on third down, and that's really difficult to do. And we saw that, you know, with the late game, late regular season, and New Orleans struggles on third down. Now, they were much more effective in those situations against San Francisco.
They definitely were, but when you think of it as that, they, with Percy coming back, I mean, that's such a hugely important point, and you really hope he stays healthy throughout this game. It's like a whole carnival of things you can do.
Yeah, and I think that changes their game plan, having that option. I think that makes them more aggressive.
And you really hope that it makes them more aggressive, and I think it will. I just don't want to see a situation, and this will really stress me out. Let's say that the Broncos get the ball first and score 3 7-point. The Broncos score, they get the ball first.
Which the only time anyone has scored on the Seahawks on their first possession all season was last in the NFC Championship.
When they got the ball at like the 10-yard line.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm not saying that it's likely, but if that happens and then the Seahawks come out, boom, run to the line, boom, run to the line, 3rd and 6, and they don't get it, I'm going to be real stressed out after that.
I'd be more concerned if it's the Seahawks have the ball first and go that scenario,
yes,
and then Denver scores.
Any situation where the Seahawks have their first possession and the first two runs are to Marshawn Lynch and they're just traditional runs, I think it's going to be really nerve-wracking.
I tend to agree with that.
I would not anticipate that. I think first play, they either run a screen, either a fly sweep or a quick screen to Percy. I think they're going to try to incorporate him immediately and let the Broncos think about him.
I think play action deep ball in the first play of the game.
Oh, man.
Pete Carroll, like, you know.
It's the Super Bowl. You got to open it up. See what happens.
Pete Carroll's got a definite YOLO philosophy to him, despite his love of the run. So I feel like on the biggest stage, he could be ready to just pull out, you know, take enormous risks.
I really hope so.
Well, I mean, not enormous risks, because it's Pete Carroll and he wants to protect the football, and that's his number one priority. But, you know, I think that they feel like they can take a deep shot and it's not that big of a risk because of the way they throw those passes.
But I do really think that the Seahawks have a pretty big advantage on offense in this game over the Broncos defense because of all the things that are available to them.
Well, let's talk about the thing that can neutralize that, and that's the pass rush. And Russell Wilson running for his life, as he did throughout the NFC Championship game.
He's been running for his life a lot lately.
It's true. Denver, obviously, without Von Miller, star outside linebacker, and the guy that they've called on to create pressure over, you know, the last several years. But they still did a pretty good job of getting pressure on Tom Brady in the AFC Championship game. And, you know, Sean Phillips and Robert Ayers have really stepped up in those roles.
They definitely have. I think that the difference between this game and the previous game is that the 49ers are obviously built from their linebacking core defensively, right? And the Broncos might be also, but Von Miller's out. That's if Navarro Bowman, Patrick Willis isn't there, and they have nobody else. I think Danny Trevathan is a pretty good linebacker. I think that Sean Phillips is an aging defender, and
they've been able to manufacture pressure from him.
I'm not worried. Okay, they've been playing against Phil Rivers and Tom Brady. Right? It's not exactly the most elusive quarterback.
It's true. It's true.
I'm not as worried. I think that
Russell has a tendency to run himself into issues even when he's not facing the San Francisco.
I do think that Russell will be able to get out of a lot of plays. I think that Russell will be able to roll himself into open areas and find receivers downfield open. Way more than he'll be able. I'm just really confident about this game.
Way too confident.
I don't know how. And you know what? I've been preparing for this for so long. If you recall, like week 2 or 3, when I was telling you how bad the Broncos are. I've been telling you how bad the Broncos are for so long and how overrated the Broncos are.
I'm going to assume I've been disagreeing that entire time.
I don't know if you necessarily have. Consistently throughout the whole season, I've felt that the Seahawks are a significantly better team than the Broncos are.
Can I give you a troublesome stat that maybe will make you less confident?
Okay.
So I ran out earlier the Broncos splits by 3rd and 7 or longer, or 3rd and short. Well, you know what the Seahawks have converted on 3rd and 7 this year?
What's that?
23%.
Oh, man.
So you better not get off schedule. You better not get a hold, which the Seahawks have gotten a lot of those. You better not get a full start, which the Seahawks have gotten a lot of those.
That is one big neutralizer. I will definitely agree with you there.
I mean, to me, it's really offensively, as much as we can talk about what a great weapon Percy Harvin is and everything else, it's all on the offensive line. If they hold up, the Seahawks should be able to score. But if they don't, it could get ugly.
Offensive penalties could be a big deal. I know Denver against New England also had some big holding calls. It's not as big of a deal for Denver getting those plays as it is for Seattle.
No, they don't have to stay on schedule the same way.
But that could be a big neutralizer.
Yeah.
So I will allow that. Let's say that the Broncos do have some drives where they're consistently picking up third downs. They pick up 3, 4, 5 third downs and they have an 8-minute drive or something like that. That limits the amount of possessions in the game. And then the Seahawks have 1 or 2 possessions where they get an offensive penalty and you're down to maybe 5 possessions to score instead of 8 possessions to score.
Absolutely, and that's what we've seen all season, is that that kind of puts a lot of pressure on you to make every play.
So that is a bit of a concern, and I could see those penalties coming, especially on the wide receivers blocking on the outside. I would not be shocked to see in this game a hold called on Jermaine Kearse or Golden Tate.
I would be surprised to see a hold called on Jermaine Kearse. He's pretty good at it.
Right? He gets holds called.
He's gotten once in a while.
But I wouldn't be shocked to see one of those called, and I suppose that is kind of sobering.
Yeah.
I also had a dream last night about the Super Bowl, because this is all that I'm thinking about, where I cried a lot, and you were there. That's bad.
I was just okay with this.
And the Seahawks were down 9-6, all field goals. The Seahawks were down 9-6 with 4 minutes left in the game, and the offense was playing so badly that I had no faith in Russell Wilson with the ball, with 4 minutes left, only needing a field goal to tie.
How dare you not have faith in Russell Wilson?
A dream trip.
How dare you?
It was a really bad game leading up to that. I cried multiple times. I don't know why.
I hope that's not prophetic.
Mrs. Fantasy Genius asked me earlier today if I would cry if the Seahawks lost, and I told her probably not, but there's a chance.
You can't really prepare for how you're going to feel in either scenario.
Going out of my way not to die before Sunday.
I've been thinking about that too.
Have you been thinking, why is that a thing that happens?
I don't know. I was very concerned about when I was driving home today in the rain.
Yeah, I was driving here in the rain. I was like, just please don't die. I've thought this before every single one of the playoff games. Like, it was like Friday night before the Saints game on Saturday. And I was like, I hope I don't die in my sleep tonight. I hope somebody doesn't just shoot in through our windows and kill me. Are other people thinking this?
Probably not. I would hope not.
Okay, the other thought that I have is, are other people thinking this, is how do you react if you win the Super Bowl?
I mean, you can't really think about that in advance without it being a total jinx.
Other people are thinking, I'm not saying they're going to. I'm just saying,
understand.
What do you do? We don't know in Seattle.
I mean, I have been a member of two championship-winning WNBA teams.
Okay, so I was talking to my friend Chris, and I was like, what do we do? What, do we turn over cars? I don't know.
Like fires?
That feels really natural to me. It seems like probably what we should do, but he was like, Kevin will know better than anybody because of his minor league experience.
First off, I resent that term. I resent it as much as Doug Baldwin resents people calling the wide receivers pedestrian.
Has anybody ever called the wide receivers pedestrian? Anyway.
I could Google that. I don't know. I think someone did. I like Bill Barnwell saying he was worried that it might have been him.
Yeah.
Anyways, it was a little different because, number one, I was working, so you have actual work responsibilities after the game that you have to think about. And number two, because I just went to like official team parties afterwards, you know, as an employee of the organization. So
okay.
It wasn't quite the same scenario.
Here's a question. Did you have a bottle of champagne? Did you shake it up and down and then pop the cork with the champagne going everywhere?
You know, no. There were surprisingly few bottles of champagne in the locker room when the Storm won in Atlanta in 2010. It was kind of actually a limited supply.
How much?
Disappointingly so.
How much of a jinx would it be if I were to purchase bottles of champagne before the game?
Too much of a jinx.
Okay, so I shouldn't do it.
Especially because our cousin is known to have ample champagne already.
Okay, good. Good point. Good point. Champagne will be
just
around.
Irrelevant if, at the Seahawks.
If needed.
Yeah.
That's a good point. I remember when Barack Obama was first elected in 2008 and we all brought bottles of champagne, but I think that's a little bit different. 538 had already projected the win.
Yeah, if Nate Silver goes ahead and tells us the Seahawks are going to win, I'll feel totally different. I'll have to get on the horn with him and ask him about that.
Okay, so let's go into prediction mode.
Okay.
Right?
Can we talk about, I mean, can I include keys as well?
Keys?
Because, I mean, I think we've done that a little bit. But one thing we haven't talked about that is a pretty important...
You do your prediction first.
Well,
and keys and prediction.
The one thing I want to talk about that's really important is Seahawks in the red zone. Big problem lately. They can't run the ball nearly as effectively in the red zone. It was almost lucky that they ended up with 4th-and-7 in the NFC Championship game because it allowed them to score from like the 38 and not have to deal with that. But you're not going to beat the Denver Broncos putting 3 points on the board at a time.
Absolutely. They definitely need to score when they get in the red zone.
And I think you may have to be more aggressive because of that. So that's maybe a prediction, is that Pete Carroll goes for at least one unlikely 4th down.
Interesting.
Because he thinks he needs points to beat the Broncos.
Anything else? Any other keys? I want you to do the whole thing. Before I go, I have to transform in a Nostra Tristan mode.
Is there a hat involved?
There will be. If I'm right about any of these predictions or all these predictions, then I'll get a hat.
Or the other key would be, and this is obviously fairly obvious, but the turnover battle. All three of Denver's losses this year, they've lost the turnover battle. They're 4-3 in those situations. And the one thing I see is, I see at least one Peyton Manning interception.
Interesting.
Because... You know, Richard Sherman wrote about this on his blog for MMQV earlier this year. He throws ducks, and, you know, his arm strength is not bad, but every once in a while you see a throw. There was one in the AFC Championship game that absolutely was sitting up there for all day, and the New England cornerback, I don't remember if it was Kyle Arrington or Aqib Talib, I think may have actually overrun the football because it was up there so long. The Seahawks aren't going to do that. The Seahawks are going to make a play on it. They are going to pick off that pass. So I see them with a pick. And the other thing I'm going to predict is potentially a Monty Ball fumble.
Really?
He's been vulnerable to that all season. He's been running more in the playoffs. So I think he could put it on the ground.
So how many you're predicting two turnovers for Denver?
Yes. So Seahawks, to win the turnover battle, would have to have one turnover.
I don't really see the Seahawks turning the ball over in this game.
I mean, do you ever anticipate the Seahawks turning the ball over?
I do. I could easily see in a lot of games Russell Wilson trying to do too much and ending up fumbling.
Trying to do a spin move on Alden Smith.
That's never a good idea. If I tried to spin move against Alden Smith, I would die. Okay, no Tristan mode.
Well, should we talk about the weather?
I honestly don't think the weather is going to be a factor. I think it's a tired talking point.
I mean, it's obviously overrated. It's, you know, the number two thing after Richard Sherman.
I refuse to be part of this conversation.
I don't think you can refuse to be. Wind is a factor in NFL football games. We saw that in the game against New Orleans. That game was totally affected by wind. And it's possible that the conditions could affect throwing the football and therefore force the Seahawks and the Broncos into more of a run-heavy style, which you would assume favors the Seahawks, but maybe not as much as you think, given the way the two teams actually rate.
So I think that the Seahawks will pass the ball really well. That was me not participating in the weather conversation.
Fine. It's a real thing.
We'll see if it's a real
thing. It's overrated.
It's going to be 35 degrees and sunny. It's going to be a beautiful day.
I don't know what the latest is in terms of chances of precipitation.
We've never followed the forecast in East Rutherford, New Jersey more than ever right now.
It's true.
So I think that the Seahawks are going to pass the ball really well in this game, right? I think that I think that he goes for...
Give me a line. By the way, currently 13 degrees with light snow.
Over 265 yards passing.
Over 200. Wow, that would definitely hit the over if we were doing a prop bets. By the way, 20% chance of precipitation on Sunday. It's way down.
I think that's what it's tired okay. talking point.
Maybe it is.
National media over here. I think that Percy Harvin will be a huge... You are, truly. You're more worried with how weather will affect Jonas Valanciunas, though. I think that Percy Harvin will be a huge factor in this game. And something that we didn't talk about is how the Seahawks dominate the special teams battle against the Broncos.
That is important to discuss. The Broncos are overrated because of playing at altitude.
They are good at kicking field goals, though. That is their only strength on special teams is kicking. They're really bad at kick coverage. They're bad at returning kicks. They're really bad at punt coverage. And they're really bad at returning punts.
So you're saying that Percy Harvin may be a factor as a kick returner?
Percy Harvin returning a kick for a touchdown.
Wow! That is a bold prediction.
I think they hit Jermaine Kearse for a big touchdown. I think that Percy Harvin returns a kick for a touchdown. And I think the Seahawks score one more touchdown from a Marshawn Lynch run. A short Marshawn Lynch run.
So you see Addy a field goal here?
I think that I've seen enough of the Broncos, right? I've seen a lot of the Broncos to know.
Such disdain, too. I've seen enough of the Broncos.
I've seen enough of the Broncos to know that they're going to score points.
Yes.
With all of my confidence about the Seattle defense, I think that Denver will still put together drives, no matter how bad they're playing. They always put together drives, right?
Yep.
And I see the Seahawks going up at the end, or maybe punting the ball. And in honor of the Super Bowl being played in New York, I have to quote the Queensbridge legend Nas. From the album Illmatic, the song Halftime. Because when it's my time to go, I wait for God with the 4-4. Talking about his 44 Magnum. He says fo-fo, but I didn't really want to do that accent. Driving down the field, Peyton Manning, the god quarterback. The Seahawks defense, Nas, waiting with their fo-fo. Bring it on. 4 points or more lead. Denver needs a touchdown to win. The same situation we've been in all year long.
I mean, that's pretty much the dream scenario for this. I mean, not for Seahawks fans, but if you're a neutral fan, you would like to see the game on the line with Peyton Manning versus the Seahawks defense.
And the Seahawks stop Peyton Manning. Maybe an interception, maybe stopping them on a fourth down, maybe they sack Peyton Manning in a fumble, but they do not score the touchdown, and the Seahawks win by 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Okay. Chances of winning?
I have my chances of winning. I'm so definitive. 55%. Honestly, these teams are
very evenly
matched, and I think that the Seahawks have a slight advantage. They are a better team than Denver.
I also am going to say 55%. Statistically, a better team. Again, as you point out, if you match it up differently, if you match it up unit versus unit, it's offense versus defense, you assume that the offense and the number one offense, number one defense, relatively neutralize each other. The Seahawks should have the edge offensively versus the Denver defense, and they should have a big edge in special teams. So yeah, I also am thinking 55%.
100% chance we find some champagne. Pop that champagne, and it goes everywhere.
100% chance we feel strong feelings on Sunday night.
It's true.
Very strong feelings, one way or the other.
It could be the other way, though. Peyton Manning could drive down the field, boom, hit Eric Decker for a touchdown. Game is over.
Yeah.
He's God. He's the God quarterback coming at us. And we're Nas waiting with our 4-4.
You have really put together a compelling metaphor for this game that I really encourage all of you, as you're at your viewing parties, your Super Bowl parties, to explain how it's the Seahawks are like Nas. If you're at our Super Bowl party, that would be kind of weird.
Yeah. And how Peyton Manning is like the God quarterback. Really, Tim Tebow is the God quarterback.
Yeah.
They bring Tim Tebow back.
Somehow we're going to execute retribution for them letting go Tim Tebow.
So I have one final thing, right?
Okay.
And this is a question for you. So I have one child already. If I were to have another child and the Seahawks win the Super Bowl, first child is named after Italian soccer player Luca Toni in celebration of the 2006 World Cup victory for Italy.
And also the city of Luca.
Never heard of it. If the Seahawks win this Super Bowl, and I were to have another child, don't you feel that I would have to incorporate in some sort of Seahawks name into that child's name?
Okay, number one, is this automatically a boy in this scenario?
No, boy or girl.
I'd like to see what the girl's name would be. I want to think more deeply about
it. Boy's name Gabriel, girl's name Aria. Set in stone.
Oh, that's the first name. Okay, so this is just the middle name.
Yes. Or whatever.
Marshawna?
No, I don't like Marshawna.
Okay.
First off, do you agree that we need to incorporate some sort of Seahawks name into this potential child's name?
It depends what Mrs. Fantasy Genius says.
She's not for it.
Okay.
But this is an important talking point in our household. I mean, pushing for this.
Especially if you can get an Italian name. So I think Breno is actually the way to go.
Oh, Breno. Had not considered that.
Although that may curse your child to be really emotional and angry for the first, 25, 26 years of their life before they get it under control with the help of Tom Cable.
You're saying Gabriel Breno, I was almost going to say Giacomini. Gabriel Breno Carasino. That's a pretty good name. I hadn't considered that. I was focused more on Marshawn.
Yeah.
Singularly focused, or Richard Sherman, or something like that.
Or Beast Mode.
Beast Mode.
Yeah. Beast Mode Squad.
But Breno is a slight nudge toward the team, but not overt.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it could. We've worked up a solid compromise here.
That's really good. Good work.
All right. Well, on that note, I'd like to thank everybody for listening, and thank everybody for listening throughout the Seahawks season. Obviously, we will be continuing on next week, win or lose.
Maybe.
Yeah.
If we don't die before then.
I find that unlikely.
But thank you for listening.
Go Hawks.